My special guest today, Aaron Biebelhauser, singer-songwriter, musician from Louisville, Kentucky, has released a new single, Wyoming Child, which will be released in an album coming up soon, Lovin' and Leavin', a bluegrass tribute to his very good friend, Mickey Clark. We're going to talk to Aaron in the second hour of today's program. Aaron lives about an hour from where Unreal Bluegrass is recorded. He lives in Louisville, drove up the other day, took about 3.5 or 4 hours because of traffic, but we waited it out, got together, had a good time, and you're going to enjoy it listening to Aaron Biebelhauser. I'm really happy to welcome to the first time to Unreal Bluegrass, Aaron Biebelhauser. How are you, Aaron?
Super glad to be here, man. Thanks for inviting me.
It's a blast, and you drove up here, man. We've talked before about, hey, you know, we're just like an hour apart. Except today it winds up being, what, 3 or 4? The trip from Louisville to Northern Kentucky winds up...
I thought about it when I pulled up into the parking lot. I had enough time to make it up here and back home and then back up here again.
Yeah, if it hadn't been for the traffic. If it hadn't been for the... I appreciate you driving up
here. It's all right. It's good to visit.
I love the new song, Wyoming Child, gets a lot of play. Ever since I got my hands on it, it's been on Unreal Bluegrass.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for spinning it, sharing it.
Yeah, and I thought we could talk about this song, the fact that it's going to be on an album coming out, I know, what, in 2019?
It's either going to be the very end of the year or it's going to be in January.
Okay.
It's kind of a bad time to do it right around the holidays.
Yeah.
So it might end up being that we wait till New Year.
I got you.
But look for another single to hit maybe around IBMA time or something.
Okay.
September,
October. Okay. The Aaron, you've been in bluegrass for a while, and you're still in Louisville area, and you've played with a lot of people. For the people listening who may not know that much about you, give me just a little bit of a brief rundown on your connection with bluegrass over the years.
Yeah, that's awesome. I've been playing primarily with my twin brother Adam. We sing together and play in a band called Relic. Kentucky-based band. We play mostly regional dates and stuff. It's kind of hard to get everybody in the group on the same page with getting too far away from home. And as we talked about a little bit earlier, everybody's got to rely on their day job situations and family life and everything else. So you got to balance everything out. But I make more appearances without the band than we do all together. And my primary focus as of late has been more in the songwriting end of the spectrum, but I also wear a few different hats in the bluegrass world as most of us have to do in order to make it. But I'm a radio broadcaster at WFPK in Louisville, and write songs and pitch songs to other bands, bands like Balsam Range, Del McCurry Band, Dale Ann Bradley, The Wooks, a few other bands, Michael Cleveland, Flamekeeper, Rick Ferris, I think, has got a new one on his new upcoming record. But mostly focused on writing and pitching songs to other groups. But I'm also a multi-instrumentalist, play a bunch of different instruments, and can stay kind of busy at home doing session work for local artists, whether they're bluegrass or folky Americana stuff. So I kind of wear a few different hats, but this has been a great project here. This single that we're talking about, Wyoming Child, is the first of a tribute record. This time I'm not focusing on my own writing. These are songs that were all written by my dear friend who passed last year, a guy named Mickey Clark.
And I want to ask you, and I don't want to bring it up if it's a good friend that's passed away, but I want you to tell the audience about Mickey Clark.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's sort of the whole reason why decided to make a whole record of Mickey's tunes. He was sort of a mentor to me, but he was also just a hardworking local musician well into his 70s by the time I got to really meet him and know him. But we became good friends in his final years. And Mickey had songwriting. He was kind of following the same sort of path I have been, writing and pitching songs. But he pitched songs in the country music world in the 1970s and 80s. It was a little easier to get through to some of those groups. He had hits with the Oak Ridge Boys. Jerry Lee Lewis recorded a song of his. The Glazer Brothers. Lots of different groups. Glenn Yarborough. A bunch of different groups have recorded stuff that he had done. But Mick, later in life, was just a hard-working Louisville, Kentucky guy. And I thought he wrote some great songs. And it started out kind of as a little joke where Mickey would show up to our local gigs and we would show up to his local gigs. And inevitably, when he would show up, we would sing one of his songs on stage. And it was kind of, he always thought it was a big honor. It was really sweet of him. But we just thought it was fun because we liked his music. And so I decided to kind of put together a, I don't like to use the word all-star, but a bunch of different...
it is, though.
A bunch of different guests appear here, and we'll talk about those guests.
It is a tribute. Well, it says right on there. I have the single in my hand, which I've played a lot, as I mentioned, but it's a bluegrass tribute to Mickey Clark. And you have more than just like a little bit of an all-star band. That's primo right there.
Hey, you know what?
That's got to make you feel great.
It does feel good. It feels good mostly to the collaborative part of this has been incredible, but it feels really good to breathe a little bit of new life and extend the legacy of Mickey's writing his songs into a new audience because he never had any sort of traction in bluegrass whatsoever. So, you know, I don't have a whole lot of control over anything outside of bluegrass. I don't have much control within bluegrass. but
you don't have control
whatever,
over track either.
Whatever influence I do have, I feel like I could share Mickey's legacy and his songs. And it's special to have some of these artists on here because a lot of these, the project has been about bridging the gap, not the gap, but bridging, connecting the dots between Mickey's past, his songs, and my trajectory forward, whatever that may end up being.
Yeah.
But Sam Bush appeared playing mandolin on this first single, and he's on three other tracks on the full record. He played fiddle on a song and mandolin on some other stuff. But Sam goes
People
way
forget
back.
How great. And Sam's from Kentucky, so he must have known. Did he know?
They knew each other.
Oh,
that's the whole thing. Is I was trying to connect the dots, and Mickey... I'm sorry, when Sam moved to Louisville, he was like 19, I think. He moved to Louisville to play bass with a little country group called the Cumberlands. And they were sort of bluegrassy. Harold and Betty Tom used to play bluegrass. Jim Smoke, I think, was in the band at the time.
I know
he was a banjo player.
Sure.
Songwriter, too. But anyway, Sam would hang around Louisville after their gigs and go visit and see bands like Tim Kreckle. Had a band called Dusty, and he would go see Mickey Clark, and he would go see... It was a whole scene, like there is in any little town.
Sure.
But it also, you know... So Sam ended up becoming friends with Mickey and recorded later on some demos and some other full-length records that Mickey had done through the years. So there is a connection there. It wasn't just arbitrary. Let me see who I can get... But he's quite a ringer to have on the record.
He is.
And it was super fun to work with. Michael Cleveland as well. Michael played fiddle on this track, and he played a bunch. He's played a bunch of stuff. He's had a lot to do with my musical endeavors throughout the years.
What you've brought me, Aaron, I have right here on my table as we're talking is an album of yours, Somewhere in Between, and also Southwind.
Yeah, and both of those records have Michael's fiddle and mandolin and a few other instruments.
Have you ever had him play guitar for you?
He played rhythm guitar on two tracks, one on each of those records there. But yeah, he's a great banjo.
He's a great everything. now how did you cut? Here's the thing that's interesting. We talked a little bit before we got started about the connection. I guess there's this connective tissue because you have a definite connection to the members of Balsam Range, who we both revere a lot, as does the entire bluegrass community. How do those things? How do they connect up? And they're so strong. I mean, you could call Buddy Melton, who's on
yeah.
this, and you can get. And they know you, and you know them. And maybe the world doesn't know the connection, but there's this connection among musicians that I think is amazing. This family thing, or brotherhood, or whatever. And that's the rest. We'll talk about the rest of the people on your song, but
yeah.
That's a big thing.
It is a huge thing, and it's. And actually, it's funny that you brought up Buddy's name while you're asking the question, because I remember talking to Buddy several years ago, and I was saying, you know, you guys are really on fire. This is when the Mountain Voodoo record came out a couple years ago, and you guys are really on fire. And what's going on? He in not so many words, he sort of had to explain to me. He's like, a lot of this work is about, I mean, a lot of people are creating great music, but it's about the relationships you have with other people. And it's not just a matter of you have to know people to succeed. It's kind of the other way around. If you're able to create something nice, along the way you get to connect with all these wonderful folks.
Yeah.
And then it's all sort of reciprocal. It works its way back around. And it really does, because Buddy would, at the drop of a hat, say, "Hey, man, can you sing this?"
And he's singing back. He's singing backup on this.
Yeah, he sang back the hard part on Wyoming Child, and he's going to do some more singing and playing on some other tracks on the record.
You and I talked, and because we're from Kentucky, not just because of that reason, but and going down the list, let's talk about the single some more, Wyoming Child, which is out now. Steve Cooley is one of those guys that I wish, and you know him better than I do, but I know of him as being a top-flight banjo player.
Yeah, he's one of the best.
He's one of the best, and he can do anything, and he's in Louisville all the time, and you and I talked a little bit before we started recording about, I mean, for me, an hour or 4 hours away, depending on the gravity.
It's an hour.
I wish I could see Steve more often, because I know he's top shelf.
He's a great player. He's an unbelievably good player and an innovative sort of stylist. I can always hear Steve's playing. I hear elements of it in other people's playing, and I say, man, that sounds like something Steve would do.
Well, yeah.
I think that's probably a banjo geek thing, though. You and I probably had
it
in common. Where
we're and we know, we were talking before we got started, that not that just to focus on Steve, but he's part of your recording process, mm-hmm. and your network. How many people remember, outside of banjo geeks or bluegrass people, that he spent that time with the Dillards?
Oh, yeah. He was the longest-running banjo player in the Dillards, including Douglas Dillard. Steve was in the band for 19 years with the Dillards. He took the job originally as an electric guitar player when they were kind of doing more country rock stuff.
Yes.
And they had a drummer in the band, an electric bass player. And Douglas was in and out of the band. So they really needed somebody that could kind of handle both ends of the spectrum.
Yeah.
So they took Steve on, and Steve played electric guitar on a whole bunch of stuff. And then whenever it was time for Douglas to make a departure into another realm.
That's well put. Doug inherited a lot of different he existed in a lot of different realms. All at the same time.
I've heard some good stories from Steve about the road with the Dillards. And Steve's a wonderful guy. He's been a huge influence on me and my brother Adam as well. Talking about Mickey being a sort of a hard-working local musician in our community, Steve is kind of a cut from that same cloth. I mean, he was you could at any week you could kind of figure out he's probably working somewhere. 3 or 4 or 5 nights somewhere.
And that's the key too, you know, this being a, we'll say, local to Louisville, but we talked about the nature of local musicians, area musicians, which we have
communities
here.
Of musicians. Communities. Yeah.
You know, one thing is the most important is that you're working.
Yeah.
You know, and that you're out there doing something somewhere and working, and that's important that you do that.
There's a lot of people, I think, that, I mean, like, have a passion for music. I mean, like myself, I mean, but none of us, I don't think any of us in bluegrass are out to try to become a star, or we wouldn't have picked bluegrass. But it's
Alan Monday, who we were talking about, I forget if it was on the air or not, but Alan Monday used to, went back when Country Gazette days and all those, which was one of my favorite bands in the 70s.
Yeah.
Alan would be at festivals, and he had a poverty vow that he made, that he made new bands who got off the bus sign the poverty vow. Mm-hmm. And I've seen it, and it's like basically it makes the point that you swear that you know you're never going to make money doing it. He had a pledge, and he would take it to band. New acts got off of the, you know, the travel and the bluegrass festivals, and Alan hadn't been around all those years. The vow of poverty.
I think you're right. They're just funny.
You have to love it,
and you got to have a sense of humor about it too. But but part of your deal about working musicians in local communities, I mean, that's just another way. It's another avenue to take. Somebody like Steve has been working his rear off for all these years, and he's spent 20 years on the road. So he's fine. He can make a decent living.
Yeah.
Hammering out tunes and playing music, just like Mickey Clark did in his final 10 years of playing music.
You know? Let's I want you to talk about one other guy on this single,
yeah.
Chris Douglas, who I do not know at all.
You shouldn't, because he lives right across the river here. Chris is actually originally from northern Michigan, a town called Alpena.
Is that who you were going to go see if it hadn't taken you 5 hours to get here from
Louisville? We still might catch up.
Okay, all right.
We hardly get to hang out and visit anymore, but he's a great musician. And I just was excited. This is one of the guys that was not really connected to Mickey's work at all. It's just he's just always been one of my favorite bass players. And I just wanted to include Chris on this. Chris's brother is a guy named Lloyd Douglas, who's a fantastic banjo player. He played with Detour. He played on Michael Cleveland's last record. But Chris comes from a musical family. His brother and his dad all played music. And matter of fact, he played bass in Rhonda Vincent's band years ago when Michael Cleveland was in Rhonda's band.
With Tom Adams?
I think Tom
Adams. Around
that
same time, Thomas
Edge.
I remember that band. Okay, I guess
yeah.
I saw him.
Yeah, Chris has been a hard... He's another one of these guys that's got a great detail here in Cincinnati and Northern Kentucky, playing all sorts of... He plays Western swing, he plays bluegrass, he plays jazz, he plays honky-tonk music. So he kind of makes the rounds and stays busy. He's also in some sort of musical theater business around here, too.
Well, let me talk to you. By the way, if you're just tuning in, Aaron Biebelhauser, we're talking about this great new song, Wyoming Child, and more single, another single on the album that will be released, we'll say, within a year's period from today, which is June. But you and I have been trying to get together for a while. And last week, you talk about musical theater. You did something in Louisville, original composition. Now
yeah.
It's
cast
now, but tell them what you were working on last week.
It's really exciting. Well, I'm done with the work, but the show is still going on, so I don't know. By the time this airs, it may not be, but it's a part of a long-standing tradition in Louisville, theater company called Kentucky Shakespeare. This is their 59th season in Central Park, providing free Shakespeare productions all summer long, three main stage productions, and one of those, the opening show this year is Shakespeare's As You Like It. So I got the great opportunity to be invited to compose original music with the existing Shakespeare lyrics that are 400 years old.
I've never heard of anybody doing this before.
Me neither.
Well, how did you get invited?
I mean, they just... I got invited. There's a few more connections, like... It's all about connecting the dots here. My wife is in the musical theater business around Louisville, too. And this is how small a world Louisville is. In my day job, as an electrician, I'm an electrician by trade, and have been the electrical guy every year when the season starts.
Oh,
I come
okay.
hook up the electrical there. So everybody knows everybody. But long story short... The director, the creative director of Kentucky Shakespeare, had heard of me and knew I was writing. We don't call it composing when you're writing folk songs, but you know, he basically decided he was going to set the he was going to set this play.
If you're composing, you better get paid a whole lot more.
No kidding. He decided he was going to set this play in sort of post-Civil War Eastern Kentucky, rural Appalachia, and obviously that's pre-bluegrass.
Yeah.
But the first thing he thought of was this Kentucky. We need somebody that has this sort of influence. So he reached out to me because he kind of knew I was the guy that was writing songs for bluegrass around the area.
Well, the songs that you composed for the Shakespeare Theater. Were they bluegrass tinged, or were they more Civil War sounding things? Or
they
or
were
what?
Sort of in between.
Okay.
And it's hard to not let the Shakespearean, Elizabethan sort of language steer you in a direction that ends up...
So the setting was different, but he was using the same
words. The same dialect.
Okay.
I mean, he's still all very Shakespearean.
Yeah,
he didn't rewrite the script. But the setting is more about the scene and the music and the style, the costumes. But that's part of the whole deal with Shakespeare, is that there are sort of universal truths that happen in those stories that are hopefully timeless.
So far they
have been 400 years later. But it's been fun. I scored four original songs for the show, and then they end up using four or five more for segues and different snippets in the, within the show.
So were you writing, were you using words from the plays and adding music to them, and were people singing them?
There are folks singing them. These songs are actually, they exist in the scripts. They exist as songs, but there's no music in existence for them. So each production kind of can take the liberty of writing something new or borrowing something from 100 or 200 or 300 years ago.
That's great.
So they decided to. Part of the goal of some of these theater companies, and Kentucky Shakespeare in particular, is all about employing professionals in our area. Because there are so many, just like there is bluegrassers, there are pickers and singers, there are actors, and there are stage hands, and there are sound designers and set designers that are all top quality in their craft. And part of the deal is we want to keep them in our community.
Well, we do.
We can't if we don't employ them.
We do, and I want you to, and the Louisville Symphony Orchestra is always, you know, they're top flight, but then they're always struggling.
Yeah,
to stay above water, which is so sad. It's a reality, but think of all those people that are full time musicians,
right?
And there's always money issues involved in them. I read about it all the time.
Incredible. But it was a real joy to work on the Kentucky Shakespeare show this year. And I did create some backing tracks to kind of work on stage with the musicians and singers that are on stage. So there's a little bit of backing tracks and. At any given, there's one lead singing guy that's a character in the play called Amiens is his name in the play. But and then there's harmony singing. And I've also music directed this show, so I was in rehearsals with them, teaching them all the singing parts. There's one guy that plays the banjo on stage and a gal that plays the fiddle on stage. And they kind of work along with the backing tracks.
Well, let's do this then. So now I know that you're not only writing bluegrass, you're composing songs. What's your musical background? What was your training?
I started playing the piano in fourth grade, and it was mostly just classical music and the occasional like show tune that whatever my piano teacher would let me learn.
Yeah.
But when I became a teenager, I kind of got more interested in. Not following what my teacher asked me to do, but like kind of learning on my own. And I got heavily interested in like ragtime, old piano music, and then more interested in folk music. And eventually, when I was about 18 or 19, I got a banjo. And that was the sort of end of life as we knew it. I exist in a different realm from our near closer to Doug Gilbert.
Yeah. It happens. So that's great. People who don't see inside the bluegrass world out and only see it from the outside, never really experience it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't realize how many trained musicians. They think everybody's learned on their back, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
And they assimilate all this, but they don't realize how many trained musicians. And they would be surprised that Aaron Biebelhauser could write scores. It's not a knock on you. They just don't get it. They don't get the fact that bluegrass musicians are trained professionals and they write music. And I don't mean just like write a melody. They write the music out on the charts. Mm-hmm. I've had people say to me, well, no, but I mean write music. I said, they are writing music. They can write music. They aren't just doing, they aren't tabbing out things for instructional materials. They're writing music on the staff on the page.
There's lots of guys and gals in bluegrass. They sort of run the gamut, really. There's people like the Kruger Brothers who can play any kind of music there is and compose and play just as straight up Latin Scruggs style bluegrass if they want to. And I heard Jens Kruger say one time that you know, in classical music, virtuosity is sort of what you want to become the most fantastic violinist to play to be the soloist. But in folk music, that's not the goal. The goal is you just get your guitar out and you can pick with your buddies on the tailgate or on the porch or whatever.
Right.
And he didn't say it exactly like that. but he said that's not the goal. However, I think there's a good I think there's room for all sorts, all skill levels everywhere, right? And all kinds of music.
No, and I didn't mean to say learning on the back porch is bad. Earl Scruggs learned that way. I'm just saying that I think people are surprised how many people like you are in.
I learn more on the back porch.
Well, sure. That's where you get the feel. That's where it really sinks in. But I still think that people are surprised from the outside, looking in, realizing how many people like you write music.
Yeah,
and I don't mean I don't mean like pick out a tune, write the music.
Right.
I don't know why that is. Listen, there are great musicians that learned the way that a lot of us learned listening to the music of the old time players and getting those things really let them soak in. But then they learned to write. But there's so much talent in bluegrass. We talked about this a little bit before we started recording this. There are so many great musicians. Well, you mentioned the Kruger Brothers. I don't know of. And Joel, by the way, I can't remember the bass player's name.
Joel Landsberg.
Yeah. They're all three. They're Uwe. I mean, you talk about musicianship. Those guys, and they travel, it's like they're glued together.
Yeah.
If you see one, they're all going to be together as a unit.
Right.
It's like Russian nesting dolls or something. They're always right there. But they are just... like you said, they can do anything. And there's a lot of...
And they're super nice guys.
They are.
The sweetest guys ever.
They came here for Doc Watson.
Did they really?
They love Doc Watson. They got some records in Europe, and that's why they located in North Carolina.
Yeah. Because
they were close to where Doc was.
I do remember when... and this is going to connect everything back to...
Good. Thank you.
The other Steve Martin.
Yes.
Another Steve Martin.
Yes.
In bluegrass.
Yeah.
When Jens Kruger won the Steve Martin Banjo Award,
yes.
They were all super excited. The guys in the Kruger Brothers were all excited that the newspapers locally said, North Carolina man wins Steve Martin.
There you go.
And they were so pumped up that they didn't say Swiss immigrant.
That's right. Swiss banjo monk who spent a year on a mountain. I swear he's not from this planet.
He's so good. He's just a student of all things music.
Yeah.
He's so good.
Yeah. Thank you for helping me understand those issues. But so the new album, when it comes out, was this the title cut, Wyoming Child? Will that be the
name
of the album?
It's not the title track. The title of the album is going to be called Lovin' and Leavin'.
Okay.
A bluegrass tribute to Mickey Clark. And that's, you'll see why. The Wyoming Child sort of captures the essence of the Lovin' and Leavin' song. And Mickey Clark, one of my big heroes, he had a knack for writing that sort of tune. And I think it's kind of, it's really probably the most common song topic ever. You know, it's not even really a topic. It's just these songs are about loving and leaving.
Yeah.
It's the classic idea to write a song about, but it's the hardest thing to sit down. As a writer myself, it's much easier if you had some topic. Somebody said, well, let's think about something in the steamboat era, and we're going to create this character that's shoveling coal, and we're going to write a song about that guy. But it's much harder to write a love song, just deep heart and soul.
Yeah.
And Mickey had a knack for writing a good loving and leaving song. So there's a whole bunch of those and a whole bunch of great pickers on it.
I'm glad that you're here, and I'm glad that you turn me on to Mickey Clark. If it's not a learning experience, it's not worth it to me. So now I know Mickey Clark, and I know I'm going to get some more music from him as this album unfolds.
Yeah, and there's one other guy I wanted to mention. Aaron Youngberg, the guy that's handling the mixing and sort of just putting all these, because there's so many moving parts, I'm getting so many guests, there's lots of remote recording here and there, and Aaron Youngberg is a great banjo picker and pedal steel player and sound engineer, producer out in Fort Collins, Colorado. He's in the band FY5.
Yeah, sure.
With his wife, Erin. They're both Erin.
Since you did that, I don't remember her name, but I know who you're talking
Erin
about.
Erin and Erin.
Yeah.
And Mike Fenders, Rich Zimmerman, they're great pickers, and they're featured on another track on this record, too. They're wonderful friends of mine and good songwriters and good people.
Man, I'm glad to meet you.
I'm glad
you made it. I'm glad to send out the posse for you because you were stuck in traffic.
It was super fun. It was super fun to visit.
So you probably have a website.
Yeah, the best route to find me is through social media.
Okay.
I do have a band website for my little band, relicbluegrass.com. You can always reach out through that. But if you Google it might be hard to spell my name, but you can probably find it. Or if you Google Blue Collar Dreams or one of those things,
okay,
that's sort of the best way to find me. But Relic Bluegrass is probably the easiest way.
If you remember, when you and I were talking about, when I first got this, I wanted to introduce it on the air when I first got Wyoming Child, and I called you and said, before I do this, how do you pronounce Biebelhauser? I had a couple versions, none of which were Biebelhauser.
Yeah.
So that's where they would find Aaron Biebelhauser, and they would track you down that through that name.
And, you know, there's one more person to thank on the, through the process of releasing this. I've been working with Melanie Wilson from Wilson Pickens.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I know Melanie.
And she's been a great help. And it's funny, we talked about this. I entertained the idea of, like, maybe I should put this record out without my last name on it so people can spell it and find it. I don't know. And I toyed around with the idea. And
nah,
I thought, you know what?
You can't do that.
It's too late for all that.
How about Aaron Cougar Biebelhauser?
Yeah, right.
And then after you're a hit, you can drop the cougar just like John Mellencamp. That would work. Well, this is great, man. I appreciate you coming up. And I'm glad to finally meet you.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Had the music on for a while, ever since I got this and some of the other things, too. But I'm just thrilled to meet you and so proud of what you're doing down there with the Shakespeare people.
It's so fun. We've got a few opportunities to get down and check it out before the season's over with.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so. Man, thanks for coming up.
Yes,
it's good to meet you, Aaron. I hope it was worth the trouble to drive here for
absolutely
all this traffic.
Absolutely.
I'll catch up to you later down the road, I promise.